The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Bukit Tov, I was actually enjoying the Fleetwood Mac, Howard. I used to enjoy it then, and I actually was quite enjoying it now. So I don't know why you suddenly felt you didn't like it.
Yes, know. Boomer.
No, it's okay, Boomer.
Okay, Boomer.
Okay, Boomer. Have you? Are they using that expression in Israel yet?
No, we haven't. We've got to translate it, I suppose.
It's Beseder, Boomer.
Okay, Boomer.
No, it's
okay,
not okay.
Boomer.
Sababa, Boomer. it's
sababa
all of,
is the word.
Yeah, it's like, all right,
although
fine.
I have to tell you, you have to be very careful when you use the word sababa. It also ages you. People know exactly which generation you are when you do the sababa thing.
Is sababa not current anymore?
It's for certain people. You've got to be in a certain kind of age category to get away with sababa.
All right. Well, now we know. All right. Let's just talk about what happened in Syria last night. The IDF carried out extensive attacks against targets in Syria in response to the rockets that were fired towards Israel yesterday morning. All right. Who were the IDF attacks aimed at?
So yesterday morning when we spoke about this, I was unsure whether the IDF, whether the four rockets that were fired was in response to an IDF attack that we think possibly took place in the Damascus area, or whether the attacks were in response to the rockets. I think we've got a very, very clear answer right now, because if indeed there were those attacks that were carried out in Damascus last night, it seems as if the four rockets that were fired were a response to that. And last night, that was the previous yesterday morning. And then last night, of course, we see the IDF really carrying out extensive attacks. No question about who was involved. The IDF have acknowledged that they were responsible for carrying out attacks against dozens of targets across Syria, mostly aimed towards the Iranian Quds Force, which is based in southern Syria. And the Iranian Quds Force is also being held responsible for the four rockets that were fired towards Israel yesterday morning, and which it seems didn't even really cross over into Israeli territory before they were intercepted by the Iron Dome anti-missile system. But there's a long list of targets that has been released by the IDF in terms of those that were targeted last night by the Air Force. They talk about anti-missile systems. They talk about storage facilities. They talk about military training camps. They talk about just a numerous different targets that were fired against last night in those attacks, which took place just after 1 o'clock. Naftali Bennett had a little phrase that he used in talking about these attacks. Of course, he's the Minister of Defense, and what he said was that anybody who attacks Israel during the day will not be allowed to sleep well at night. That was the phrase that he used, and then he went on to say that's what happened last week when those attacks were carried out from Gaza, and also that's what's happening this week when Israel has come under attack from Syria as well. And I think that this is really all about Iran in Syria and the Iranian Quds Force that seem to be quite well entrenched and well established in that southern Syrian area. And of course, this has been a great opportunity for the IDF to go in without any pretenses, without trying to hush who is involved, and without trying to hide the fact that the IDF is involved. And there has been a very, very, very strong warning issued as well by Defense Minister Naftali Bennett against the against the Iranian regime in general, saying that, you know, they should not try to take on Israel, that the IDF is very determined in protecting Israel, and that, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu said that any attack that's carried out against Israel will be met with a response. And we've seen that in spades last night, as the IDF really carried out extensive attacks. Apparently, a total of six jets were used by the IDF. Apparently, the Syrian forces and the Quds force were warned not to deploy their anti-missile systems or the anti-aircraft systems. They didn't heed the warning. Those anti-aircraft systems were destroyed by the IDF as a result of them being deployed. Luckily, unfortunately, there were no casualties from the Israeli side, but we do understand that as a result of those anti-aircraft systems being targeted by the IDF, that there was some damage suffered to civilian buildings in Syria. We haven't heard of any casualties at all. But of course, this has been a very, very extensive and serious attack on Syrian sovereign territory and, of course, against the Iranian Quds force in particular.
What can we expect? I mean, do we think, is there going to be condemnation of Israel? Is there an acceptance that Israel was responding and has the right to respond to these rockets that were fired from Syria into towards Israeli territory? What do you think is going to happen?
I don't think that the condemnation, if any is coming, if any condemnation does come, I don't think that it will be extensive, and I don't think it will be very, very serious condemnation. There may well be some words uttered here and there, but I think that this one is actually probably going to be allowed more or less across the international community. I don't think that there are going to be many negative comments made about this. And I think some of it is to do with the fact that, of course, it were a response to those four missiles that were fired yesterday morning. But I think also some of it is about the fact that Iran's involved and that Iran makes absolutely no bones about calling for the destruction of Israel. Last week we saw it again where Iranian leadership said we've got nothing against the Jews. It's just that we don't want Israel to continue to exist and that we will do everything we can to destroy Israel. So, I mean, Iran makes absolutely no bones about, you know, those kind of statements, no shame at all, no embarrassment in calling for the destruction of Israel at every opportunity. And the fact that these attacks last night by the IDF were carried out against Iranian targets based in Syria from that regime, which is calling for the destruction of Israel, seems to kind of legitimize to some degree the IDF's responses in Syria last night.
All right, so let's just move on to the coalition talks. The mandate given to Benny Gantz to form a government expired at midnight. Clearly no progress being made. Now what?
Well, in Hebrew, they're calling this the Plonter Politi, which is a kind of translated into the political tangle. Which is exactly what we're in right now, and we have been in for some time. There was this late night emergency meeting held at the Prime Minister's office between Benny Gantz and Prime Minister Netanyahu. I don't think anybody had it in their minds that some magic would suddenly be made and a government would be formed. It was quite clear that things would just kind of fizzle out, I suppose, in terms of the mandate that was given to Gantz. What now? Well, we're into the 3-week period now. It almost sounds like, you know, we're going to have a fast day coming up soon. We're into the 3 weeks now where any Chaver Knesset, any member of Knesset is entitled to form a government without necessarily being handed an official mandate by the president. If he indeed succeeds in forming a government, he will advise the president of that. And of course, it will go to a vote in the Knesset. I don't really know whether we can realistically believe that there will be a government formed in the next 3 weeks. We all hope beyond hope that it will do. And, you know, I certainly had it in my mind that I thought there was only one way to form a government, and that would be a national unity government. I still don't rule out the possibility of that happening, although I think it's going to be interesting to see whether the legal side of things intervenes in the next few days, whether indeed any official announcement is made by the prosecution about whether they're going to pursue an indictment of Prime Minister Netanyahu or not. And I think that that could very potentially change the situation in a substantial way, either one direction or the other. In other words, if they decide there is no indictment, then that would probably strengthen his ability to form a government. What I do know is that Benny Gantz's advisors, the people who are closest around him, the other leaders of Kahol Lavan, including Yair Lapid and including some of the former generals who are within the party, apparently are all advising Gantz very, very strongly not to go into a government with Netanyahu at all. Unfortunately for Israel, that is really the only way in which a government can be formed. I don't see a possible way that a minority government of any effectiveness can be formed, that we can expect that to happen. So really, it's all about a national unity government and who's going to blink first, and whether the politicians see the sense that some compromises will have to be made in order just to get a government formed, even if it's just a short-termish government until the current issues can be resolved to the satisfaction of the electorate and people can be allowed to decide more logically who should be leading the country. But at the moment, unfortunately, we're into an impasse situation. No government has formed. We're into the 3 weeks now. We're all hoping that that will somehow miraculously deliver a government. And I think it'll take a miracle in order to do so, because as a radio report said that I listened to this morning, the gaps between Kahol Lavan and Likud are massive. They're still even potentially unsolvable. They're probably too great. And of course, we have the Avigdor Lieberman Trump card in the middle. It's still not clear which way he would prefer to go. He's said all along that he would prefer to see a national unity government. I think he's right, because that's really the only logical way in which a government can be formed. But at the moment, there is no seeming way to resolve this political impasse.
Absolutely dementing.
It is.
People in Israel must be so just sick of this, surely. I mean,
people are very frustrated indeed, because the truth of the matter is that a third election won't solve anything. We'll be back in exactly this situation. Perhaps we might be more educated. We might have a better idea of what happens with the judicial system and with the legal case against Netanyahu, and that may well throw a different light on things. But other than that, everything else will be the same. Nothing's going to change dramatically over the next 3 weeks or 3 months even.
Anthony, aren't you actually doing much better without a government than you were with the government?
So there's a question.
Well, I think the answer to that is no, Howard, because first of all, I mean, you know, we do have a government. Let's say that we do have a government, but it's a government with one hand tied behind its back. Mm. No political appointments are being made. I mean, no progress, no policies are being pursued. I mean, we just have a government that's kind of treading water, that's responding to the emergency situations. No budget can be passed. No judges can be appointed. I mean, we're literally in an impasse. We're treading water, and this is really not a good thing for us.
Absolutely. Anthony, before I let you go, we always seem to run out of time when I want to talk about this. We discussed yesterday the ruling of the High Court of Justice that the products being distributed in the EU come from Israeli settlements beyond the Green Line. Now they're now required to label it. How does this sit alongside the statement by the EU in Israel that they don't support BDS?
I've been thinking a lot about that, because let's start out by saying that where BDS began life was an attempt to try to boycott goods and services that emanated from areas beyond the Green Line. BDS has then turned itself into something which is entirely different from that. But that's where it really started out life. It had no original intention to boycott goods and services that came from within the Green Line. That, of course, has changed a lot. Now we see the EU High Court of Justice making this ruling, saying we have to label things separately when they come from beyond the Green Line. I'm not quite sure why people would be interested to know that. Are people going to buy wines that come from within the Green Line and boycott wines that come from beyond the Green Line? This is kind of what I'm wondering, whether the consumer will respond differently to goods that come from one area as opposed to another. And if they do, and if this is what it enables them to do, then is that not effectively what BDS was really all about to begin with? Even though that's maybe not what it is right now. Mm. So I am kind of perplexed about the statement that the EU embassy in Israel has issued, which says we don't support BDS, we're anti-BDS. However, the High Court of Justice has really ruled something which will enable those people who support us at BDS to implement you know, their boycott against certain goods and services while potentially supporting others. People who want to support Israel will likely buy the goods and services whichever side of the green line they come, because in all honesty, these are things that are being produced by Israelis on land, which apparently now the American government has said is not illegal in terms of international law. We can talk about that separately tomorrow, because that's a discussion in itself. But I am a little bit confused about how this sits alongside BDS, I have to be honest and say.
Yeah, indeed, and I tend to agree with your thoughts. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow.